listening to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM, and this, we have got so many awesome things that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about Peter Brock and the lawsuit battling over his inheritance, the inheritance from his life for his children. We're going to be talking to Jennifer Skews about how we program emotions and what tips us over the edge emotionally. We'll be also talking about divorce and unbelievers, looking at 1 Corinthians. And now we're about to be talking about the biological dogma that women don't make new eggs after birth might be wrong.
And if you're just tuning in, you missed a fantastic Bible study in our first hour on Nehemiah. So you're going to want to make sure you jump onto our podcast later and have a listen to that.
Yeah, thanks, Shell. Good reminder there. And Shell, while you're at it, can you give us our next quiz question for today, please?
Yes. And I'm feeling sad that Scaffy's not here because this is his favorite kind of quiz.
Oh, what is it?
The Bible or not.
Oh, okay. All right.
So you got a 50-50 chance here. Is this in the Bible or isn't it? And this is actually my favorite one that I've put together so far. It's the phrase, does it originate from the Bible or not?
Okay.
Okay. So this is the phrase, a drop in the bucket. Do you think that phrase is in the Bible or not? So we've been going through a series of phrases. Some are, some aren't. What about this one? A drop in the bucket. Did that originate from the Bible? Is that a phrase that we hear in the Bible? If you know, 0491-064-669. 0491-064-669. I have two incorrect answers in the studio.
Wow.
So don't give it away in any capacity, but 0491-064-669. I don't even have to look, Lindsay. Obviously, it's going to be right this time. She's given me the opposite answer. So our question again, Bible or not, is the phrase a drop in the bucket found in the Bible or not?
There you go. Well, look, we'll find out what the answer is a little bit later.
Yes, indeed we will.
I'm looking forward to the answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, surely by now you figured out it's the opposite of whatever you gave. So.
Yes.
Interesting. We'll talk more later. Otherwise, I'll give it away. Okay, we are heading into our current affairs, and I've got some really interesting news to share with you that this has just popped up in the last couple of days. Have you ever heard, and Shell, maybe you've heard about this in the past, have you ever heard that when you're born as a woman, as a female, you have all the eggs that you're ever going to have already in your ovaries?
Look, I did know that that happened at some stage, but I didn't think it was right at birth.
Yeah,
it's right at birth.
That's what they've been telling us for 70 years.
Wow, okay. Yep, yeah. I'd forgotten that fact. I obviously knew it at some stage, but yeah, wow.
Yeah. So, and I think it's supposed to be something around about 400 eggs per woman, approximately. It might be a bit more, might be a bit less. But that's what we've been told since the 1950s, is that you have all the eggs that you're ever going to have ready to go. And when you start puberty, the numbers start dropping until you have basically none left. So every month, there are more that are released and are lost, and you just get less and less and less. And so that's where the idea is that the older you get, the less fertile you are and the less chance you are of getting pregnant, until there comes a point where you do completely stop having the chance to become pregnant. Now, this comes from research that was done in the 1950s. I think it was like around 1951. There was a single study done. And since the results were released from that one study, this is what we have been taught. Today, that is not considered very good science. And we have a lot more science that has just been released regarding various different types of mammals over the last two decades. Scientists have identified cells in the adult ovaries of mice, cows, pigs, non-human primates, and humans that under certain conditions appear capable of generating new immature egg cells known as oocytes. They aren't certain whether these cells can produce viable eggs at this point. However, the findings are fueling a contentious debate in reproductive biology and raise a provocative and controversial possibility ovarian aging may be far more dynamic than we thought and perhaps even reversible. I think that this is good news. I think that this is it gives a little injection of hope for people who think, you know, maybe I'm too old to have children. I have friends who are around 40 years old and they still haven't had children for whatever reason. And they're thinking, you know what? I've been told that once you pass 35 or 40 years old, if you have a pregnancy, it's called a geriatric pregnancy. And there are higher risks that science basically says that you have for these types of pregnancies. And for a lot of women, that gives them a sense of insecurity and I guess just some fear and anxiety around pregnancy in the later years of life or of the fertile phase of life. But it's really interesting that this shows that after 70 years of this belief that's been out there in the world that is supposedly backed in science, it actually might not be completely true, that maybe you're not born with every single egg that you're going to have at birth and lose the ability to have any more as you continue. But there's this evidence that there could be these primitive versions of the eggs that could develop into viable eggs. We don't know yet if that is possible, but it does look like that there is a possibility. So I think that's some really cool findings, and it can be an injection of hope for women who either, because we know at this point, and I talk about this a fair bit, that there is a singleness epidemic, and when there is singleness into the 30s and 40s, there's less likelihood of people getting pregnant, obviously, and we don't want people getting pregnant outside of a loving family environment that can be supportive of raising a family. That would be the best and most ideal situation for having children, is to have a husband and a wife to raise a family together. So for the women who are getting married much later in life, it doesn't seem to matter as much for men when they get a woman pregnant, but for a woman it really matters. And they have this We have this biological clock that's ticking, saying we need a baby right now. I need this happening before I miss my chance. And so I just want to offer this as a little injection of hope that maybe there's a little bit more of a chance than you think there is. Maybe there is a bit more time up your sleeve than you thought you had. And certainly if God has a will for you in your life to get pregnant, even at a bit of a later age, he's shown multiple times in the Bible he can definitely make that happen. So that's that. What do you think about that? You're just sitting there kind of looking at me like, this is not my topic.
No, not really. And not having kids ourselves, we lost a few early in our marriage. But it is encouraging that there are quite a few women later in their life that do have children.
Mm. I even heard a few years ago about one woman around the age of 60 who had a child.
Yeah.
So the myth is being debunked more and more as time goes on.
Yeah. There was a friend of ours that I think they were 45 or something, and that actually given up.
Mm.
And they thought, you know, that was the end for them. They were going to be childless. But then, amazing, they fell pregnant and couldn't believe it and had a child.
That's so cool. That is so wonderful. Yeah. No, 45 is definitely not too old.
Yeah.
That's what the prevailing story in the medical field seems to say, that, you know, 45 is pretty much too old. But as you can see with people that you know, that it's actually not past the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what science and medicine does with this new information about these oocytes, these very basic forms of human eggs, and if they're able to find if they will become viable eggs that can be used in the future. Be really interesting. I guess it's a case of watching this space, see what happens. If this is something that is interesting to you, if you have Hey, look, if you're listening and you're an older woman who is still wanting to have children, or you've lost hope, or maybe there's somebody that you know in your life who has been struggling in this area, let us know. We want to hear from you. What's your story? What have been your challenges? What have been your joys? Have you experienced like a later pregnancy than you expected that you would? Or do you know someone who has? We want to hear from you.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
We have a quiz answer from producer Shell. What was that,
please? We do indeed, and I've been chatting with everybody who's been sending through the answers and finding out if they actually knew the answer, if they use great detective skills to read your guys' response.
What have they been saying? I haven't seen this. Let me have a look.
Well, just the way that you guys responded was like in total shock. Like, how could we be wrong about this? And so they're like, it's got to actually be there. So they figured it out.
Hold on. But let me see. Where is
and
this?
Because there's three of us, don't two votes beat one?
Nah, it doesn't work that way. Well, you can't outvote the Bible.
Yep. And Stuart originally said no. And then he's like, well, there's a similar one there, but it's not exactly like you said it. Basically, he's saying, but it does depend on which translation you look at. So yes, a drop in the bucket is in the passage in Isaiah 40, verse 15. And it says, indeed, nations are like a drop in a bucket, and they are treated like powder on a scale, like he lifts up islands like dust.
Oh, I knew that. I should have
you
known
that. You did know that?
Yes, I did.
So a lot of the passages say a drop from a bucket, and some say drop in a bucket. But either way, I'm going to say that it originated from here.
You just gave the reasoning, and I was too busy looking at the text line to actually hear what you were saying.
What do you mean?
Like you were just saying a bunch of words just a second ago, and I was like searching through the text to see what people had been saying. So I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, you're going to have to go back to the podcast.
Yeah, we're not going to repeat it. That would be a waste of airtime. It's just, I missed out again.
Yeah, well, you'll have to just read the passage there in Isaiah. It's really quite interesting. Yeah, very cool passage. So yeah, that one I think really shocked me the most when I was going through and making up the... I'm looking forward to more of these phrases that I have lined up for later through the year. Now, I'm trying to hold myself back from not doing them all at one time.
was this the conversation you were having with ChatGPT earlier that you were showing me?
No,
or is that something else?
No. That's a question for like
some other day.
A week or two from now.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't see the answer for that.
Yeah, I was having trouble wording one of my questions, and so I'll often ask me buddy chat robot on yeah, it was just really funny the way that, because I'm like, the way that he tried to word it, or it tried to word it, I didn't think it made any sense. And so I replied back and I'm like, doesn't this make more sense? And it's like, well, yeah, but I would just tweak it this way. And then it literally just wrote it back exactly word for word. And I like double checking. I'm like, he hasn't changed it. It hasn't changed anything. And so, yes, I gave it a hard time. And I said it was sorry. It was trying to take my credit.
Didn't you say you must be a male robot because you're like taking credit for exactly what I've done? It's
That's
like,
right.
Well, I'm not male or female, but I guess you've caught me mansplaining to a woman. So.
Yes, I don't talk to robots that much, but occasionally it is fun to do so.
Okay, well. Ben, you have a story for us today, something about people bickering over lots of money.
Yes. This is a guy's story since we've had lots of girls' stories today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter Brock was a legend motorsports motor car driver.
Okay.
And
Never heard of him.
I was a follower of his when I was younger.
Now, I'm very interested in hearing this story because I am in a very, very, very small capacity related
what?
To him.
How?
Really?
Tell me more.
Well, because my husband's grandmother was his auntie.
So you guys could be up for some part of the inheritance too, right?
That's what I'm thinking here. You know?
Well, that
but,
could.
But she wasn't my husband's grandmother through blood, only through remarriage. So that kind of knocks us out again.
Yeah, I guess. Alrighty.
Yeah. Well, there's still a lot of people making a lot of money from Peter Brock because his memorabilia, his cars and quite a few other things are being sold and traded and, for a long time. So, yeah, legend Peter Brock. Unfortunately, he died in a rally car incident. He was actually a better hard track racer, and he was raced the Commodores and the Taranas. The SLR 5000 was one of my favourite cars, and I always wanted to own one, but I haven't got that now. But they're worth a lot of money these days. Anyway, there was before he died, he had three wills, and the last will that he had was a do-it-yourself, and the will was blank except for his signature, and it didn't have a witness on it either.
What?
Yes. But on the will, he had that he was leaving it to his wife, or ex-wife, to fill in the blanks.
Wait, hold on. Did they get divorced before he died?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. Does that change things?
Apparently not, because all three wills had this. Yeah, had his wife, original wife, in it.
Hmm.
Yeah, he had a half son, a stepson.
Okay.
Sorry, and two kids. Yeah, and so he was worth quite a bit. Even his childhood home that was sold for $893,000. And his first wife had a mansion. Built a mansion on acreage that was worth quite a lot. Yeah. So you know, the takeaway here, I think, is that money. It's very easy for money to, you know, divide families, and relationships come secondary to money. And I think for us as Christians, that we need to have our priorities right, and even be fair in what's due to each family member. Yeah. So, what do you guys think about the idea of money and family?
Ooh, I don't know how much I want to share, but oh man, there's some family history that's also been kind of dramatic when it comes to wills and things as well. I don't want to get into it too much.
It can be scary and bad. That's
right.
Oh
man, like 15-year dragged out type of battles,
disputes
in the courts,
and disputes over the will.
It's literally ripped families apart.
Yeah.
My father comes from a family of 12 kids.
Oof.
And when their father died, his workshop just, my dad went in to see it, and it had already been just like cleaned out, from nieces and nephews and, from whoever. But yeah, and he was just devastated, that they just came through and like, oh, I'll take this, I'll take that, without it being done through the proper channels. It's very sad.
Yeah.
But I think it's just very, very normal and common, but unfortunate.
Yeah. I'm really grateful that when my grandfather passed away, I was living in Melbourne at the time, and literally a week later I moved up to Queensland to be with my grandmother and my auntie, and I got to be a part of the process of emptying out my grandfather's ginormous wood turning shed that had 30 years worth of, bits of wood stashed in all the corners and the rafters and everything.
That's cool.
And it was really healing for me to be able to be around as the process was happening, because I really needed that to process, because I had grown up on that property in my afternoons after school or on my summers, and we'd, have a cubby house, we'd go swimming there, we'd help clean up the sawdust in the shed every day before dinner and things like that after school. So it was so important to me to be around that and see it done really, really well, especially after some other people on the other side of the family just going crazy. So,
yeah. In my work as a church pastor, I've had to help a lot of families work through this through this stuff, and some of it, can be not very nice. I bought a house in Young where I lived, and there was a real estate sign out the front, and I went inside and knocked on the door, and there was a very old couple there. The house was full of furniture, and the guy's sister had passed away in a home, and the house was fully furnished, and they were beside themselves, didn't know what to do with all the stuff. And I said, look, I'll buy it as it is and take care of it. And I said, you take what you want. And so he sent the message out to his family, and there was a big grandfather clock, 6 foot tall, right to the floor. And, one of the family members went through the house and they took the grandfather clock, and that was it. And I was ended up with the whole lot, everything, even the toothpaste.
Wow.
The clothes in the cupboard.
That was all they took.
That's all they took. There was food, furniture, everything.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think, you know, a lesson for us is that, money shouldn't be the be-all and end-all of life, and relationships and family is more important than that.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a message in from Stuart saying, 25 years to sort out my parents' estate. Big wins for all the solicitors.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Mate. Well, that was a cool story that you shared with us, and certainly something to make us think about how we approach the things of this world.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
And we have now got Jennifer Skews in to talk to us about how we program our emotions and what tips us over the edge emotionally. How are you going, Jennifer?
Going very well, thank you.
That's good. Now, what do you want to share with us today?
Okay, well, I have talked a bit about emotions over the few times I've been back on. And it's such an important part of the brain, because God has given us an emotional brain. And that brain, it's called the limbic system, but it's the largest part of the brain, is that emotional brain, and it's right in the centre of our brain. So it's very important. And really, emotions are the things that make our life of value, and we can enjoy life, but also emotions can bring us unstuck. Where I thought we can get on that emotional roller coaster. And this is about, well, what are emotions about, and how can I get off that roller coaster? You know, what puts me on there, right? Because when we're born, we're given a range of emotions. They're already programmed in. And the interesting part is apparently the last month of when we're in the womb, before we're born, we actually program the mother's emotions. So if mum is a happy person, we can program that. And unfortunately, if she's an anxious person or depressed, we program that. So it's a bit scary sometimes when you think of those things. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
That's really interesting. Like, I'd never heard of that before, that final month. Are you saying that you program to be the same as your mother's emotions, essentially, like that's what you're more likely to be inclined to do throughout life? If she's anxious in that final month before birth, that you're more likely to be anxious just in general in life? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that will be programmed in. But it depends on, because we've got other genetic factors, it depends on the environment we're born into, and what happens after birth. But it's likely that will be a strong element. In my life, my mother was a very anxious person, and that's something I've struggled with, yet my personality isn't really anxiety-focused. So, yes, we are affected by it, but the good news is when the brain is programmed, you can change the program and you can add in anything. You can build a new program in the brain and not use the old one. So
that's
the good news. Yes, this is, isn't it? Just as well. I mean, God has given us an amazing brain, and he's also given it the capacity to rewire and reshape. And that includes our emotional brain. Now, emotions are wired in the five senses. So that means when I have an emotional experience, it's attached to my five senses. It's programmed in with sound, sight, touch, taste, and smell. So that means any of those senses can trigger the feelings. And I guess when you look at it, like I think of when I've been on a holiday and I'm looking at photos, and I feel so good. It brings back that emotion that I experienced on that particular holiday. So on that level, it can be good. But if we've had bad emotional experiences, they can also be triggered. And that's what tips us over that edge emotionally. And I don't know if you've had the experience where maybe you meet someone or something will happen and you have this massive emotional reaction, an overreaction. And you go, what happened there? You know, why did I react so badly to that emotionally? I think anger is probably one that people experience that with. Something happens and road rage is a prime example. When you're driving, it's an overreaction, but we can change that. To change anything, one, you have to be aware of it, and you have to know what you want to change, and you have to have insight into how you can change it. So, and that's something we're not born with necessarily, and it's not something that we're usually taught. You know, our parents don't always have those capacities, so school does not teach us how to work with emotions. So it's something we have to learn along the way. It's we're emotional school, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
We're always learning. Mm.
That's and, interesting.
Yes, but with things like, I guess anger is a good example of an emotion, a strong emotion. Because if we didn't have anger, we're born with that capacity. Anger and fear are two emotions that protect us.
Yes.
Right? So if I didn't have fear, I would do things that might threaten my life. Right? So they do have a very good purpose, but we've put them in the wrong context. So we might be angry with someone because of what they said. And that wasn't deliberate on their part, but because of our experience, it triggers that emotional reaction. So that's when we get what I call emotional reasoning. So if I'm feeling angry, I interpret things with that feeling, right? If I'm feeling happy, that's how I will interpret, like if I get up in the morning and I'm having a good day and all is well, then what that emotion does, if something happens, I deal with it very effectively, right? Because my emotions are in that space. So emotions are driven by our thoughts. Our thoughts are driven by our beliefs. So if I believe something, I think it, and that's when the feeling is expressed. The emotion's programmed in, but we express it in our feelings. So it's not easy sometimes to deal with the way we feel, but there's always a way we can deal with it. I get people to write down what they're thinking. So if I get you to feel sad, what do you have to do? You have to think sad. Yeah? If you're happy and you want to feel sad, you've got to think of a sad event. So this is where we can control emotions through the way we think. Right? Does that make sense?
Can you explain that in maybe like more of an example?
Okay. So well, one of them was, as I said, if I want to feel sad, I've got to think of something sad. But it's emotions or the feelings that express the emotion that I have, it works through your conscience and your reasoning, right? So if I'm feeling sad, my reasoning is thinking that way, but we also have a conscience, and the Holy Spirit will work through our conscience. That's our lifeline to God. So this is where we can work with God to be able to deal with that emotion.
So
if I'm connected, it makes a big difference than if I am just trying to deal with it on my own.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this correctly. Like, if I am feeling some type of anxiety or in a state of sadness or whatever, mm-hmm. and I don't want to stay in that state, I can actually change yep. into a better state that's going to help me get through life, yep. be more resilient by deliberately yep. choosing to think of something that makes me feel safe or makes me feel happy or makes yep. me feel secure. And so I can choose particular thoughts
yes.
that are going to make yep. me feel those things. Is that what you're trying to tell
us? Yes, it will help us to deal with that feeling. Anxiety is a good example because things happen, like someone who is highly anxious when they have to go to shops and, you know, go to places where they have to you know, mix with people and have a busy time, they get very anxious. So, for example, if that person gets up in the morning and goes to the fridge to get the milk out to make themselves a drink and there's not much milk, they immediately feel anxious, but they're not consciously aware of it. But if they sort of say, well, hang on, why am I feeling anxious? I only opened the fridge, and they go, oh, the milk, I've got to go to the shops. Oh. Right? So the conscious mind can put it together. And that's where I find working prayerfully helps us to have that change, that thought. Right? Anxiety is also a feeling that is in the body. And if we can observe the feeling versus be the feeling. So if I can say, well, my body is anxious and the way I'm thinking is anxious, I do think I still do it sometimes, write down what I'm thinking, because that helps me to go, oh, no wonder I'm feeling that way because of that's how I'm thinking. How can I modify that thought, right? And that's why things like, oh, okay, I've got to go to the shop and I feel anxious about that. So it might be, well, when's a good time to go to the shop? You know, when it's a bit quiet and there's not so many people. So you might do some problem solving or look at a solution to deal with. Or if I do my breathing, it helps to reduce my anxiety. So you're actually observing it and what I call like a toolkit that helps you to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, so that just reminds me of a Bible verse that says, take every thought captive, right?
Yes.
And I think that's a really handy thing to do when you're feeling unsettled, is to be able to catch yourself in that feeling and go, okay, what's going on here and how can I adjust it?
Yes, we observe the feeling. And the Bible also tells us not to be anxious about tomorrow, because the anxiety is a projected feeling. And if we think of the what if, we can go into fear. And that's like that example of having to go to the shops because you're running out of milk. And what that means is that I'm thinking ahead. Oh, no, it'll be busy. I won't cope. I'll get panicky or whatever. We're already projecting the fear and that builds it. But if we can come back to the present. Now, that's what I do. I teach people to do your breathing, calm it down, look at what's the best way to do
this. Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.